This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, is...
Zachary Frueling.
We seem to be missing Liam. I don't know where he is. He must be on holiday somewhere, enjoying some shore leave. I'm jealous.
I guess that's the nice thing about having three of us hosting To the Journey now. One of us needs to step away to deal with some real life. The other two can keep the show going.
If you say so. Okay.
There is no real life outside podcasting. What do you mean?
That's true. Well, today we're going to be discussing the season 4 episode Hope and Fear.
I'm so glad you picked this episode, Suzanne. This has always been one of my favorite episodes of Voyager, and I always tend to overlook it when I think of my favorite Voyager episodes. I remember the first time I watched it, not during its first run, but years later, and something about this episode really clicked for me, and I enjoy it every time. I'm so glad you decided to talk about this episode today.
Well, the only reason I picked it was because of the Picard episode, The Impossible Box, where we learned that the Sakarians from Voyager had been assimilated. And that made me think of other species in Voyager that were assimilated, all as a result of Captain Janeway's command decisions.
I was like, wait a minute, the Sakarians aren't in this episode, are they? No. Did I miss something?
No.
We're talking about the right episode? Okay. Did I watch the right one? So do you like Hope and Fear as an episode, Suzanne?
Yes, I do. I've always liked this episode. I like anything that Ray Wise is in. Ray Wise would be the actor that played Arcturus.
You'll have to forgive me, you Ray Wise fans out there. What else was he in? He looked familiar, but I couldn't place him.
Twin Peaks.
Oh, I never watched that. That's why.
Good grief, man. You haven't watched anything of...
I remember the commercials for Twin Peaks more than I remember. I remember, yeah, there were commercials for it, like... trailers for it, for the episodes. I remember seeing those on TV when I was a kid.
Okay. That's not the same as watching the show, but okay.
No. I never watched it.
You should.
Was he in anything else?
He's been in episodes of various different shows through the years. One of my favorites being Psych. He was on three episodes playing two different characters.
See, this is why I can't place him. I didn't see that either.
You haven't seen Psych. Dude, come on. No,
I haven't.
Okay, well then you probably won't know anything else he's been in either, so I'm just going to stop.
Well, his voice sounds really familiar, and I was trying to place where else I might have heard his voice. I find his voice remarkably soothing. Maybe that's one of the things I always liked about the episode. His voice is just so mellow.
It's Barry White smooth.
Yes, it's Barry White smooth. Well, let's start at the beginning then. How about Seven and Janeway's game of velocity? That's one of the most memorable things about the episode for me.
Oh, you mean handball with phasers?
Yeah, I guess it's not like, is it racquetball or handball? Is it most like?
I'm saying it's handball with phasers.
Is handball the same thing as racquetball?
No,
those are two different things. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the difference?
You don't use a racket in handball.
Oh, that's why it's called handball.
There you go.
Sports ball, you know. Okay, got it. I think I like the game of velocity because it's so counterintuitive. You would expect Seven to win.
Why?
Because she's got those that perfect Borg-like visual acuity.
There's no such thing as perfect.
Those well-honed reflexes. There's no such thing as perfection. Tell that to the Borg.
There is no such thing as perfection.
That should have been a line in the episode. Seven, there's no such thing as perfection. Get over it.
Nothing is perfect. Nothing ever will be perfect.
What did you think of Captain Janeway's explanation of intuition? Seven says, you know, intuition is a fallacy. And Janeway goes, it's not a fallacy, blah, 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 blah. I was aware consciously or subconsciously of the velocity of the thing and the, you know, the shadows on the wall and, you know, that today was Tuesday and that mattered and all the things that are relevant to her being able to track the position of the target.
It was just a very Starfleet captain kind of answer.
I love that Seven wants to keep playing again and again and again until she wins. That is such a Borg-like Seven quality. And I'm like that in some ways. If I don't do something well, I want to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it until I get to be awesome at it. So no, I get that.
That's such a toddler-like quality or an adolescent-type quality.
Yeah, it is. It is part of the way in which Seven still needs to mature. So it's a very childlike aspect of her. You're right. There's a healthy part of that, though, like really wanting to win. I don't think that's a bad quality.
But winning isn't everything.
It's how you play the game.
Sometimes, yeah.
I know. I like that Captain Janeway kind of shuts her down. Like, no, the game's over, Seven. You got to learn to be a sport. And that's it. Next time. I guess there's a stage in which every student thinks that they've outdone the master at a certain point. And Chakotay pretty much says as much. He basically says, maybe the student thinks she's outgrown, you know, the need for you, Captain Janeway. Mm-hmm. She's advanced too much. She's mastered this, you know, game of being human. You know, using velocity as a metaphor for being human, perhaps. Is that a good thing? Like, I mean, shouldn't students eventually surpass their teachers? Or is that part of the naivete they still have? Should they always still have something to learn from their masters, their teachers?
They should always strive to surpass them, but 9 times out of 10, they never will.
You're right. That most of the time, that's true. And Seven is committing a fallacy of her own and thinking she's already surpassed Captain Janeway and everything Janeway has to teach her, which she hasn't, obviously. She's only a year into the humanity game.
9 months. 9 months.
9 months, to be exact, yes. Not even a year, that's right. Do you have any desire whatsoever to play a game of velocity after watching this? I don't know. Does that look like a fun game to you?
No, not at all.
I never thought racquetball looked like fun, and handball sounds even worse now that you describe what handball actually is.
No, it doesn't look fun.
I like
at all.
Tennis, though. Tennis, I like. I could, you know, if there were space tennis, I'd be all over that.
Isn't that Parisi squares?
What is Parisi squares? How do I not know this?
We never quite we never see really it, know. But people are always playing it, and I know it involves a racket.
You know, I envisioned it something like they'd play on American Gladiator. That's how I envisioned it. Like it was an American Gladiator sport.
Now, if I could play that, I would love to, definitely. But Zap would have to be there. Because she was my favorite. Little
blonde
Zap.
Does anyone even remember what American Gladiator is at this point? Are we so old that we're the only ones who remember? It's actually on TV. We found it on some streaming channel.
You cannot lump me in with your oldness.
Welcome to the party, Suzanne.
No.
We actually found it. It's streaming on one of the streaming services. I can't remember which one, but Haley and I were watching it, you know, a few weeks ago. We were like, oh, American Gladiator. We got to put this on. And it's the old one. It's awesome.
Sweet.
So if you haven't checked out American Gladiator and you have no idea what we're talking about and you want some awesome 1980s goodness, go check out American Gladiator. Parisi squares. I almost thought it was like the one where they're trying to knock each other off the thing with the giant Q-tips.
The joust.
The joust, yes. I thought that's how I had always envisioned Parisi squares. I don't know why that is my image of Parisi squares from American Gladiator.
Okay. I never put those two together at all. Yeah, no.
But that doesn't involve a racket, so I'm way off base.
That is not a racket.
People trying to beat each other off the pedestals with a racket. Sounds plausible.
Could happen, I guess.
Well, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, one of my favorite parts of this episode is just the characterization of Arturus. I find him kind of strangely seductive. He's a smooth talker. He's calming. He's kind of like Mr. Rogers. He's space Mr. Rogers. That's what he is.
He's nothing like Mr. Rogers.
He is. Listen to the way he talks. He's so nice and calm and slow talking. And, you know, he'll bring you down a notch.
Yeah, no. I mean, even his makeup kind of gives it away. He's got those black eyes. It's snake skin-like head. You know, very smooth, very sleek. So the makeup, he was even giving his character away a little bit.
Yeah, he was supposed to have that big brain, right? He looked like the aliens in The Cage. What Talosians? Talosians, yeah. He looked like a Talosian to me, kind of. A little bit, with a big, you know, an elongated brain in the back.
Or a weird beluga whale.
Or a weird beluga whale. Did you find it even remotely plausible that he could learn an entire language from like two sentences?
Sure, why not? He has that giant noggin.
That doesn't make any... Grammar is just more complicated than that. There's no way you can pick up the grammar and syntax of an entire language from two sentences. No way he's learning Klingon as fast as he did.
I was more impressed with his knowledge of Federation items, like warp signatures and hull polarity. He had to learn all of these things so he could fake build a ship. How did he get the computer's voice right? I want to know.
And
that.
The control panels, the yes. L-cars.
Yes.
Speaking of the ship, though, I'm a ship guy. I really like seeing new starships, especially the interiors, almost more than the exteriors, actually. I like the set design and the, you know, the arrangement of the bridge and the lighting and just how they set a mood in a set on a show. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the Dauntless as a Federation ship?
I'm not a ship person. They all look the same to me.
I love geeking out. I'm like, ooh, look where they put the control panels and look where the thing is. And, oh, they have to walk over here to do the da-da-da. Oh, they use this color for the carpet. You know, I get off on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no thanks. Not my thing.
So for you, it's just this faceless, nameless, textureless backdrop against which the action happens.
It's like a car. I don't get that invested in my car.
Oh, I'm not a car person either. I'm really not. Like, fundamentally, I'm not interested in cars. You know what I am interested in, though? I can totally geek out about trains. Don't get me started on trains.
Okay, I'm making a mental note of that because I really don't want to know anything about trains because they make me ill.
I know more about trains than I should admit in a podcast.
Yeah, I get motion sick on trains.
Really?
Yes.
I find them soothing, that kind of gentle rocking motion and just watching the world go by, seeing things you don't get to see from the road, like, and even like these romantic images of, not romantic in the romance sense, romantic in the grandeur sense, like the 19th century sense of romance, like watching the, you know, these pastoral scenes go by while I'm having dinner and sipping my wine in the dining car. You know, I love that kind of stuff.
Dude, how old are you?
Like I said, I was born old.
Good grief.
You know what else I know? I know Morse code. So there.
Okay.
Speaking of old person things. So I really like the ship. Thinking back to your first viewing of the episode now, if you can remember this far back, Suzanne.
That was over 20 years ago.
Did you see it coming that this was not an actual Federation ship, or was that kind of a surprise review? It was supposed to be a surprise, like, but I think they kind of ruined it because Arturus was, like Janeway points out, just a little too convenient of a solution.
I can't remember last week, and you want me to remember over 20 years ago. I have no idea.
I have no memories prior to last week. Yeah, that's what happens when you get old.
No, I was like that when I was young.
How did you feel that this episode served as a season ender? For me, it lacks the grandeur of a contemporary season ender, and I. Like I said, I didn't watch it in its first run, so I don't know if it felt lackluster then or if this was like season 4 of Voyager is ending. Oh my God, look at all this stuff. They might have a way home. Was it really awesome or did it fall flat as a season ender even then?
I don't remember. I just said that. And nowadays it doesn't really matter because you just binge it all anyway.
That's true. Like the whole, it doesn't matter what opens a season and what ends a season. We just... Binging didn't used to be a thing. I mean, back in the day, even if you wanted to watch it at home, you had to like buy the VHS tapes. So,
no, you could just record it, and then you have
yeah,
those
true.
Really awesome commercials.
I love watching old commercials, actually. I've always thought commercials were fun. Yeah. I could have gone into advertising. I would have had fun doing that. To change the subject completely.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that, but okay.
So for me, I feel like this episode, it was supposed to be a grander idea than it really was. And then it's not a cliffhanger at all, interestingly enough. It's just like, oh, now the season's over. Okay. I hope we have a reason to tune in for season 5. Do you like cliffhanger season enders?
For the most part. I mean, sometimes they just fall flat, but for the most part, I do.
This is something that's actually really bothering me, and Haley, too. We were talking about this last night, bothering us about Picard. The constant recap they have to do, every single episode has, last time on Star Trek Picard, and they recap the entire series for you already in order to get to the next episode. It's like every episode has to be as awesome as a season ender now.
No, it doesn't have to be as awesome as a season ender. I mean, like this last one, Nepenthe, to me just came off as fan service. The episode did nothing to further the story, in my opinion.
Really?
Anyway.
See,
it was a good episode, really? But it was like, eh, yeah, let's get back to the story.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I've come to realize that there are really kind of two, and this sounds kind of obvious now that I'm saying it, but there are really like two ways to write a show. One is to emphasize plot and the other is to emphasize character. And for me, I've always liked the latter. I like slow moving, talky, character based scenes, and I could care less about the plot minutiae that gets you there. I just want to know what's going on in the characters' minds and sort of socially and communally. And I love that this episode is kind of just a slow, talky episode. People are feeling their feelings and talking about the things and whatever, and nothing has to happen. And I'm totally fine with that. And, you know, and some people love plot, like the plot intricacies of plot and putting all the pieces together and where's the story going. And
well, you can put all the pieces together, but you don't have to pander to fans. Which to me, by bringing in Troy and Riker, that's kind of pandering. And,
do you think
I have something else to add. And this is about Soji. Why was it that the first time we see her do the data head thing is in this episode? At no other time has she done that. But, oh yeah, we're going to do it right in front of Riker. Really?
You're right. That was a little forced. You're right.
Ugh. That annoyed me. Although she did it really, really well.
I know we're supposed to be talking about Voyager, and we promise we'll get back to talking about the episode Hope and Fear here in a second. But do you think the Voyager references are Voyager fan service, or are they adding something? Because we've had quite a few Voyager references already.
And a lot of them have been adding to little bits in the story.
Little bits of the story.
Like, this is why the Borg cube has this spatial trajector, because the Sicarians got assimilated because of Janeway.
Pleasure?
Oh, that was not pleasurable for him, I'm sure.
That episode, which is forever known as the pecan pie episode. I do get a little smile when they make these references. It's like, okay, this really is part of the same universe, even though it feels so qualitatively different than the Star Trek universe we've known. And it was interesting because it had actually been a little while since I'd watched an episode of Voyager. You know, I've watched Voyager so much, I feel like I could podcast about most episodes without rewatching them. So sometimes, confession time, I don't actually rewatch the episodes. I might read the transcript or whatever.
I'm shocked.
I know. It's so scandalous. Shocked. I know. But today, I decided to sit down and watch Hope and Fear. I had a little bit of a break between things at work, so I plunked myself down and watched Hope and Fear. And having just watched Picard last night, and the contrast is so stark. Like, even though I really like the most recent episode of Picard that we were talking about, in general, the pacing of both Discovery and Picard is kind of stressful. I don't find it particularly relaxing. Voyager for me is like, I say this half jokingly, but it's like the Mr. Rogers of Star Trek. I find Voyager to be the most calming series of all the Star Treks. I don't know why. That's been true for me for a long time. And I like that, you know, soothing aspect of Star Trek amidst the chaos of life. And I'm not getting some of that from modern iterations of Star Trek. And it was, my whole point was just that it was like super refreshing to sit down and watch Voyager, not just an episode of Voyager, one of my favorite episodes of Voyager, with Space Mr. Rogers as a guest star.
Okay. I quite enjoy the pacing of Discovery and Picard. I'm more of a...
I know you do.
I'm more of a sit on the edge of my seat and enjoy a show instead of laying back and just sort of taking it in. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to watch Forensic Files and fall asleep.
See, this is true of me in general. Like, some of my favorite movies and TV shows are like slow, talky, nothing happens kind of movies. Like, one of my favorite movies is Before Sunrise. And if you know that movie, it's just 2 hours of talking. And that's just, you know, wandering around a French, European city in Austria, Vienna, just talking. And for me, I find that riveting. And, you know, it doesn't have the kind of edge of your seat riveting, but I find the character interaction riveting. I just don't need all the stuff to happen if I have an interesting show, and other things I could cite. But, you know, if you know me, you know what some of those things are. If you don't know me, ask me what they are and I'll tell you.
Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah. Anne of Green Gables. That's that's a perfect example. That's like 8 hours of talking, and I'm totally okay with that.
No, thank you. I need,
or like something like the Thornbirds would be another example.
Yawn.
Have you seen the Thornbirds?
I tried. Yawn.
You tried. Anyways, yeah, I like that kind of drama, and I don't feel like I get a lot of that from Discovery, or a little bit more in Picard than Discovery, but not as much. A lot more in the most recent episode. But I like that about Voyager. Really, honestly, there wasn't a lot that happens inside this episode either. It's mostly talk, 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 talk. Oh, we're worried about the Borg. Oh, we're in the slipstream, and then talk, 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 talk. And mm-hmm. I find that relaxing and calming and what I like about television. So I just found it remarkably rejuvenating to sit and have my 45-minute Voyager fix, for lack of a better word, today.
Okay, I don't know where we were going with that.
I don't either. That's okay.
I forgot what were talking about.
Well, let's talk about some things in the episode. What did you think about Seven and B'Elanna's little conversation about what it's going to be like when they get back to Earth?
I didn't really pay that much attention to the conversation. I was sort of riveted on B'Elanna's belly that they were trying to hide with the coat.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I couldn't stop looking at that. I'm like, you're not fooling anyone. I know you're pregnant.
Nice try. Nice try. Good idea. But I found it interesting because neither one of them is going to have a particularly easy time when they get back. Oh, B'Elanna's going to have a bunch of legal trouble. And Seven's going to have a hard time fitting in and, you know, not feel like an outcast. Maybe an outcast. You know, I mean, this is post best of both worlds. I mean, Earth almost got assimilated, right?
Yeah.
So no one likes the Borg. They're not going to be too keen on having a former Borg drone with Borg parts wandering around. So.
But even now in Picard, Seven is still searching for her humanity. So not much has changed there.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting to look at Seven of Nine through the lens of the Seven of Nine we see in mm-hmm. Picard. This might be a topic for a future episode of To the Journey, actually, because this is one thing that I find interesting, but it also bothers me a little bit. Like, you have this character we've come to know for a couple of years in Voyager, Seven of Nine. She's got certain qualities. She's got a certain way of being, a certain trajectory her life is taking. Then they do something radically different with it, you know, however many years later it's been, which is what, you know, 18 years or something like that. 18 or 19, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Does it cast everything we've seen with Seven of Nine in Voyager in a different light in any way? I feel like it does with Picard. Like, I'm having a hard time watching The Next Generation now without older Picard in mind as I'm watching it. And the juxtaposition is really hard to reconcile. And I think it's actually much harder with Seven of Nine than for Picard.
Really?
Yeah. I don't see how Seven becomes the Seven we see in Picard from what the Seven we knew in Voyager. That's not adding up for me. Maybe it is for you. Maybe you can explain it right now.
Well, no, I can see how going back to Earth when they did, mm-hmm. which, you know, Janeway did the whole anti-time cop thing, but
yeah, whatever that was.
Yeah.
Wibbly wobbly, wobbly, timey wimey stuff.
She didn't really have a place to fit in when she got back. I mean, sure, she had her aunt, but really, was she going to stay with her? Everyone split up, went their own separate ways. She just ventured out on her own and, you know, became a sort of a gunslinger in the Old West type thing.
I guess it's in line with Seven's character to try to make order out of the chaos that emerges from the collapse of the neutral zone. But it's such a weird way to go about it. Like, why that? Why would she become that kind of order maker out of that particular chaos? What is it about that environment that drew her in?
Well, we don't know exactly all of the details yet.
Well, that's my point. It's not adding up. Like, there's some essential piece missing. Like, why Seven would be so entangled in that geopolitical area, you know?
Because everything at that point in time is political. There's politics everywhere you go, with the Federation sort of falling apart and Romulans everywhere. It's...
Yeah, post-Dominion War, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, it's easy to make that jump and see it.
She's become pretty jaded.
Yeah. She's got no one. She pretty much tells you that.
But why? What's happened to her Voyager family? What, you know, where is Janeway? Where's Chakotay? Where's B'Elanna? Where is everyone? How come? Why does Seven feel so alone? That doesn't make any sense to me.
I doubt we're gonna find out.
No, I know we won't. But that's so that doesn't make any sense. No one on Voyager would let Seven go be alone like that.
How do we know Janeway's not in jail?
How do we know Janeway's not in jail?
She broke the temporal prime directive. She could have been picked up.
She's hanging out in that prison that Tom Paris used to hang out in.
Or she's in some future, being held in a future jail by the time cops. Got it.
By the time cops. By whoever they are. What are they called?
Time cops. The temporal.
No, what are they called in the universe? I forget. The temporal police
temporal
or whoever
police.
They are. Did you find it plausible that B'Elanna really... I don't know, if you were Maki, if you were in B'Elanna's shoes, would you want to get back to Earth and face the music? Or wouldn't it be like, you know, get out of jail free card, getting to be an officer on Voyager? I'm like, Tom Paris loves every minute of it. He doesn't want to get back to Earth.
But there's no guarantee that you're going to live, you know, past next week on Voyager. You never know
That's
what
true.
You're going to encounter. You could end up like Joe Carey.
If you're not dead yet, wait a week.
Exactly.
I guess B'Elanna's not one to run away from facing the music, so that makes sense. But still, it would be hard to, you know, give up being chief engineer of a starship to go, you know, be in trouble for having been part of the Maquis. What did you think about Captain Janeway's reaction to Arturis? You know, she's very, initially very thrilled, like, oh, you can help us. You can decode this message. Maybe here's a way to get back home. Like, Janeway often gets excited about that. But very quickly, she starts to realize this is a little too inconvenient.
I think that just falls back on her intuition. Which is why they brought it up in the beginning of the episode.
You know, that sounds so obvious, but I never really made that connection, that that's the whole reason they brought up the intuition thing at the beginning of the episode.
Yep.
I don't know how you approach life, but I sometimes catch myself approaching life this way, and I don't like that I do it, but I do catch myself doing it, kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
No, I don't. My husband does that. It drives me insane.
Like... Maybe it's just because I work in an industry that's a little volatile. So at any given point, I know I'm one corporate board meeting away from a layoff. So I'm always like, when's it coming? When's it coming? Just when things are going smoothly, when's it coming? Yeah. So
I'm totally, you know, if things happen, they happen. We'll figure out a way.
That's very stoic of you. And that's essentially what, like, that's what Marcus Aurelius basically said. You know, whatever comes up in the future, whatever unexpected, you know, drama or tragedies or challenge, you just face it with the same rationality you've got today. So why worry about it?
Exactly.
Very wise of you, Suzanne.
Why, thank you. No one will ever say that again. No.
You've got an old soul, Suzanne.
As long as you don't call me old again.
Okay. An old soul and a young body. Okay. You know, another thing that stands out in my memory of the first time I watched this episode, and again, it wasn't in its first run. It was the first time I watched it, like, maybe around 2002 or 2003 when I was catching it when I was in grad school. I remember the end being quite poetic, like poetic justice, I guess is what I mean to say. Like, Arturis, he's hellbent on revenge. He's he wants the whole Voyager crew to be assimilated. He can't get away with that, but he's got Janeway and Seven. And they escape, and now this guy who's hell-bent on revenge is going to be assimilated. It's so tragic because he's one of the few surviving members of his entire species.
Yeah.
And yet it's so happy-making to see him almost be assimilated, or almost see him be assimilated. Like, he just deserves it. He's such a rat bastard.
But he has a gun right there because he just tried to shoot Janeway. Why would you let yourself be assimilated?
Well, why does he?
I don't know, because he's nutso.
Is it some sort of self-punishment? Does he think he deserves assimilation because of
Because
something?
He let Janeway get away?
Like survivor guilt?
Oh, I'm sure he has survivor guilt.
as much as I kind of want to feel bad for him, I really don't. Like, he just plain deserves it.
Oh, but he would have been a great addition to the crew because all of the research he had to do, they could have used his brain in so many different ways.
I've said this a few times. I didn't really used to think this, but now I do. I kind of watch all of these interesting characters, memorable characters that Voyager brought on board the ship at one point or another, all these alien characters. I think the individual alien characters in Voyager are way more interesting than the individual alien characters you got in The Next Generation, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Voyager did a really good job with it. I wish they would have kept some of those on board that were so interesting. Mm-hmm. And this is a great example. If he had not been such a rat bastard and if he had stayed on board, they could have done interesting stuff with his character. I thought he was a really interesting character. The way they introduced him before we realize he's just a jaded rat bastard is the best way to put it. I don't know. He's a rat bastard and he deserves to be assimilated. If they hadn't gone that direction with him, he was a pretty smooth-talking Mr. Rogers character. Would have liked to see him on board.
Even at the end, Janeway was trying to save him because she tries to reclaim everyone. Everyone gets a second chance with her.
Everyone gets a second chance with Janeway. Oh, poor Janeway. She's really kind of a doormat when you put it in those terms.
No, she just wants to see the best in everyone.
Yeah, that's true. But no, wasn't happening with Arturus. Yeah. They should have brought him back in Picard. He should have been one of the XBs.
Oh, but then he would have been killed.
Can you imagine that? He's an XB and then they kill him. Oh. That would have been awesome.
Oh.
What a missed opportunity. Picard producers, if you're listening, take our advice. We've got good ideas. So I'm trying to think of other little things I enjoy about this episode. And this is just a little thing, but I love Captain Janeway and Commander Chakotay about to have their morning coffee together after Janeway's been up all night working. That's such a sweet, cute moment.
It is, but why wasn't he checking in on her earlier? She was doing that, I'm sure, when he went to his quarters for the night.
Okay, that's a little super stalky.
No, that's being a good first officer. Make sure your captain gets plenty of sleep. Because he knows that if he doesn't, she's not going to sleep. Everyone knows this.
She does burn the midnight oil a lot on Voyager.
At least maybe when he was going to sleep, he could call the doctor and be like, hey, Captain's still up. Might want to check on her later. Something. I don't know.
It's so cute that Janeway invites him for coffee, though. Like, I forget exactly what she says, but would you like to join me or something like that?
Like he needs an invitation. Come on.
Was it supposed to be kind of flirtatious or was it supposed to be just super casual and sweet?
I think that was just them being them.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Yep, that's who they are.
They dine together, they have coffee together.
They sail together.
They sail together.
Champagne.
By moonlight. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is in the category of a little complaint about the episode, because I think they do this a bit too much in Voyager. Mm-hmm. And maybe now in Star Trek in general. It's like, we can't be satisfied with warp drive. Warp drive's not fast enough. So in order to make the plot go even faster and be even more dramatic than going warp 9.9, mm-hmm. we have to have quantum slipstream drives, or we have to have fill in the blank that's even better than warp drive. The even better than warp drive, as Neelix might say about his coffee. I just find it's a device that doesn't really, it's just too easy to drag out. It's a technobabble kind of solution to a problem.
I just don't get why they didn't use 7 to create the Borg transwarp drive on Voyager.
Right, but that's another example. Like, okay, what the hell is the difference between a quantum slipstream and a Borg transwarp conduit? Or the thing we see in Dragon's Teeth, you know, the subspace corridors or whatever. It's like, what's the... It's all just, you know, it's a plot device, and they keep reinventing the way of using that plot device.
But she even mentions her proficiency in Borg transwarp technology.
That's true.
Why didn't they use that?
Well, she says as much in the episode. Like, well, no, she says she's going to try to reinvent the quantum slipstream technology in a way that's safe for Voyager. But that's not the same as using Borg transwarp conduits, right?
No.
So those are different things, right? Okay. I presume they're different things, but yes. I have no idea.
Yes.
And I like technobabble. I don't mind the tech stuff you get inside Star Trek. I think that's part of the fun of it, really. But I just find that particular way of creating more drama. Like, it's better than warp drive. Eye roll for me. So, especially when the whole point of the show is to get home fast. It's like, it's like this unnecessary carrot you can always dangle. Warp drive is going to take 75 years. So let's tease them with the next thing that's even faster than warp drive as a way of generating a plot. And I just find that kind of a weak way of generating a plot.
Okay.
Other than that, I love the episode. Everything about it.
It's a good episode.
There's kind of a moral from Seven, interestingly enough. I don't think we're in a position too often of seeing Seven teach Captain Janeway something, but Seven is really wise at the end of the episode. She says, impossible is a word that humans use far too often. I think that's totally true. I hear so many people say, so I can't do blah, blah, blah because of blah, blah, blah. When it's like, all that is excuses. And Seven's coming along saying, nope, I'm just going to put nose to the grindstone and work on the problem and figure it out. Go Seven. I think that's one of her shining moments.
But that could be, you know, turned around towards her. Perfection is a word that Borg use too often.
Too often. That's true. That's true. Reality somewhere in the middle, somewhere between impossible and perfection.
Yes. So. Strive for mediocre.
The golden mean, as Aristotle called it. The average between two opposing vices. I'm going to use this next time I teach Aristotle in my philosophy class, actually.
I'm going to be sick that day.
You're already marked absent preemptively.
Thank you.
No problem. I thought this was another great example of Janeway and Tuvok's friendship, because Tuvok is the one Janeway turns to say, I'm not feeling right about the situation as it's unfolding. And Tuvok is the right person to go to because mm-hmm. he's chief of security and tactical officer all in one. She also trusts his counsel and friendship and trusts his perspective. Like, if anyone is going to, you know, have his logic radar on, it's Tuvok.
Yeah, his emotions will not get in the way.
Exactly.
He won't be all Harry Kim about the situation.
Yes, let's get on board now and blow up Voyager while we're at it.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Harry Kim does do that all the time. Away home?
Let's go.
Golly gee, let's go.
I sold the ship for these three beans.
Oh, poor Garrett Wong. We're always bad-mouthing Harry. I love Harry Kim. I'm a huge Harry Kim fan, actually. But it is comical that he's always the one to go, yippee, we're going home.
Mm-hmm. He just wants to go home so he can get a promotion. That's the only reason.
You know, the one character that I think didn't really have anything to do... Did we see the Doctor at all in this episode? At all?
I want to say yes. Yes, he was in the meeting. He was in the meeting.
He was in the meeting. Okay, I was like, wait a minute, is there a Doctor in this episode?
Because I was thinking, I was like, how are they going to take the Doctor? Oh, yeah, he's got the thing on his arm, yeah. He was in the
right.
meeting.
Okay, you're right. He was in the meeting. Okay. I was about to say that the character that really didn't have anything to do in this episode was actually Tom Paris, other than fly the ship.
No, he held up that little octopus-looking thing and wanted to know what it was.
Right, exactly. Neelix, what's this? But now that you mentioned it, the Doctor had nothing to do in this episode.
Yes.
You think you could at least give Arturus a medical scan or something, right? But no.
He's busy.
How disappointing for Bob Picardo to have, you know, almost no lines in the episode.
He made up for it in other episodes, so I'm sure he was okay with it.
It was not a Doctor episode, which is actually kind of refreshing because you get a lot of Doctor episodes at this point in Voyager because people have realized that he's hilarious, and so writers started writing mm-hmm. for his hilarity. And it was actually kind of refreshing to see them go a different way and give other characters their due. Even Chakotay, I think Chakotay was a valuable character in this episode. And oftentimes he's not.
I always think he's valuable. Even if he's just standing there, he's valuable.
Valuable for the purpose of the episode, which for you is Janeway and Chakotay. I do have one question for you, though, Suzanne. Do you share Arturus's assessment of the Klingon language, that it is a robust language?
It's a very difficult language, so I'm more of in the B'Elanna camp. It's a little too robust.
See, I like the Germanic quality of it. Those hard sounds don't bother me.
Okay.
I still find it wildly implausible that someone can learn an entire language from a couple sentences, but
anything's
I like the
possible.
Idea of that, though. I wish I had that kind of brain that can learn a language like that. And I love languages. Part of the reason I like this episode, I think, is that I'm a language guy. I like Latin and Greek and German and the languages I know, and even things like Morse code and computer languages. I kind of do. I'm basically Arturus, a microcosm of Arturus, like baby Arturus. Like, I can do a little bit of what Arturus does on a human scale. With languages.
Okay. So you're going to make up a fake ship and try and lure people onto it?
Oh, yeah. That's totally what I meant.
I knew it.
You're on to me. My plot is foiled.
Excuse me, I have to make a phone call to the authorities. I'll be back.
If I'm not here next week, blame Suzanne.
Well, kidnapping crews to take them to be assimilated isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think the difference is that Flashback is intentionally trying to carve Voyager a little place within the fabric of the undiscovered country, say, and it's trying to place Tuvok. Well, it's trying almost to retcon, isn't it? Because Tim Russ was in that film as one of the Excelsior crew, so it's trying to do a retcon. And
no, he was in Generations. He wasn't even in that film. That's the
wasn't he?
He was I suppose it's a Brannon Braga episode as well. Brannon Braga wrote Generations. Brannon Braga, I suppose, must have realised maybe unconsciously realised that Tim Russ was in Generations as a different character.
He was, so wasn't
it's
he?
Almost like a weird. Sort of
I've got that wrong. You're
I
right.
Whether on some no, but I wonder whether unconsciously on some level that's the connection you're supposed to be sort of slipping into. And of course, that he was serving on an Excelsior class ship.
Earl Grey.
I want to see that spaceship that's got giant space-time knitting needles, yeah. and they just like do that, like as they warp through space, fixing it behind themselves. That'd be awesome.
Literary Treks.
The one that I left out that in hindsight I regret it is the one where he's is it Wink of an Eye, where he's fighting the guy in the quarters and he actually throws a pillow at the other guy and it hits him in the face and stops him dead in his tracks for 2 seconds, long enough for Kirk to get the upper hand on him. And I don't even know how to describe this. You know, I don't even know what to give. I couldn't come up with a name for it. That was probably the biggest thing, is I couldn't come up with a catchy name for it. Pillow talk or something, maybe in hindsight.
Stopped him dead in his tracks because he's like, did you just throw a pillow?
Did you just throw a pillow? Yeah.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I think I've exhausted the planet.
Well, then let me end on a funny note. The first thing I thought when I saw that senator beheaded was, well, I guess we don't need to worry about Quentin Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie anymore.
Oh, yeah, I was actually quite surprised mm-hmm. by that. But
and his blood was very bright green.
Very bright green. But,
yeah.
Bravo. Bring Quentin Tarantino back.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode of To the Journey, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, speaking of contact information, Suzanne, when you're not staying up all night hoping Chakotay will come by for morning coffee, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me popping up in the Babel Conference every now and again, and you can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. And Zachary, when you're not practicing your version of Parisi Square's American Gladiator style, where can our listeners find you around the interwebs and on the network?
I'm getting quite good at that, actually. Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show dedicated to Star Trek and philosophy. And likewise, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Suzanne, that was the most wonderfully staccato spelling of Patreon I had ever heard.
Why, thank you.
Nicely done. Well, there are a few people from around the network we'd like to thank and acknowledge. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, the person with the most elongated brain that I know, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, and Richard Marquez, our production manager. And a special thank you and shout out to our five associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of Trek.fm and To the Journey.
Well, join us next time, where we will be becoming adept in over 7,000 languages. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
Ozymandias by Percy Shelley. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert, near them on the sand. Half sunk a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear, my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains, round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away.